Dave Wilcox has joined us here on Sports Byline. He played 11 years in the National Football League, all of those in the San Francisco 49er. And, Dave, when you came down here, you decided to sign and play in the National Football League. You were drafted in the third round by the 49ers, but you were also taken in the sixth round of the AFL draft. What was the deciding factor for you to go NFL over AFL?
Well, when I was staying at the dorm at Oregon in Houston, I got drafted by Houston, and they called me on the payphone there at the dorm, and the dorm manager told me to call him back. But Lynn Casanova, who was my coach at Oregon at the time, told me before the draft not to do anything until I talked to him. I guess he must have been our agent, if you will. And so anyhow, I went in the next day after the 49ers drafted me, and a guy named Frank Lemuley, who owned the Warriors, was an Oregon alum, and was part owner of the 49ers, was in town, and he took Mel Renfro and out and bought us dinner. But anyhow, Kaz told me that I needed sign with San Francisco because he knew the owners. And I said, well, that's good. So I got a $12,000 contract with a $3,000 signing bonus, and they told me that I took all the money, and so they couldn't pay the rest of the guys. So, anyhow, but Lynn Casanova is one. I believed everything that he was my coach, and he knew best for me.
You also played with the 49ers at Old Kezar Stadium. Now, I've been here in San Francisco for a while. I certainly have gone over there. I wasn't there when you guys played. How would you describe Kezar Stadium for the listener?
That was a classic place. We used to stay downtown the night before the game, and then we would drive down to Kezar Stadium on Sunday. And Matt Hazeltine, who was a linebacker from Cal, played with the 49ers a long time, he and I would drive down Haight Street going into Golden Gate Park into Kezar, and that's when all the hippies were kind of starting there in San Francisco. So I'm not sure why we did that other than just kind of look at the hippies as we were going to Kezar. And then once you got to Kezar, it was really a nice stadium, but there was a tunnel that ran from the locker rooms out to the it'd be the east end underneath the goalpost. And in that tunnel, I don't know how, it seemed like a long ways, probably 50 yards or so, I don't know. But it was all gravelly. And so early in the year, when they would introduce the teams, they would introduce the teams from the tunnel. Well, we would always go out first and kind of shuffle around and make sure there was a lot of dirt in the tunnel before the visiting team came out. And so anyhow, we helped them out like that. But it was great, and the Seagulls used to come in towards the end of the year and play. And I remember one game, we were playing the Baltimore Colts, and Johnny Unitas and John Mackey and Lenny Moore, those guys. And one time I played across from John Mackey, and he wouldn't put his hand down on the ground. And I told the ref, isn't that there must be a rule violation or something. Well, the reason he did that is because when all the Seagulls would come in, all the worms would come up, and he didn't want to touch the worms, get his hands dirty.
Now, I understand that the fans could be pretty rowdy out at Kezar, especially if you guys were losing, because there were a couple years when you had some very tough years the 49ers. And I understood they had to put wire netting over that tunnel area where you came out on the field because the fans would throw beer cans at you guys.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, you'll have to ask Dan Fouts and his dad maybe, but I think people used to buy season tickets for their beer in the coolers and stuff. But if you never wanted to walk off the field by John Brody if you lost. Because the people would throw stuff at him. And I remember one time they missed and hit an official. And that's when they put a wire thing over the top. So the people, I guess they drank too many beers. They couldn't throw the beers over the top of the fence.
There's two other stories, and maybe you can help confirm them. And one of them is the fact that John Brody and Jack Christensen really did not get along very well. And the story, one of the stories I heard, was the fact that if the team was trailing when they came out for the second half, Christensen would be up ahead of Brody, and as the fans were booing, he'd turn around and say, "Hey, kid, they're really on you today, aren't they?"
Oh, I didn't know about that, and that's possible. I know that fans, you know, they were close and very diehard fans. You know, towards the end of the year or the middle of the season, the Cusar was kind of nasty. It was cold and rainy and foggy and all of that.
Yeah,
I don't know about that.
Yeah. The other thing I heard is that Brody would have a poker party on Saturday night before the game on Sunday, and he'd call the guys over, and he'd change the game plan.
Well, you know, that's a possibility. Like I said, I played defense, so I didn't know what they do.
Right. Speaking of that, let me ask you about the great linebacker tandem that you had with the 49ers. Wilcox, Frank Nunley, Skip Vanderbunt, those you three guys together. What was the chemistry? What was the reason for the success that you guys had?
Well, I think we really had some pretty darn good players. And you start with the defensive line. There was Cedric Hardman and Tommy Hart, Charlie Kruger, I can't think of Jimmy Johnson, who's my best buddy, the defensive back. We had Bruce Taylor. I'm talking about the 70s, early 70s, late 60s. And then offensively, had some really good players, Gene Washington and Brody, and they had some running backs, and they scored points. When I first got to San Francisco, they scored points, but defensively, we weren't very good. And teams used to beat us, I think, because of our defense. But anyhow, I wouldn't trade it for anything. There was some wonderful guys. And, you know, everybody, it's really interesting. We talk about this all the time, the personalities of the team. You know, there's 40 different personalities, but for 60 minutes on Sunday, you put your personalities aside and as a team. And quite frankly, I think in today's world, that is kind of lost sometimes. It is a team game. One guy doesn't win it, and basically one guy doesn't lose it. You know, I was telling somebody the most important player on the football team is not the quarterback or running back or stuff. It's the center. Because if the center doesn't snap the ball, nothing happens, right?
Right.
And the quarterback, he didn't want the ball because he either throws it to somebody or hands it to somebody. So he's at the end of the line as far as I'm concerned. So it's the linemen and the people up front. But it does take 11 guys at a time to do it. So it is definitely a team game. And that's the thing. When I quit playing, it wasn't necessarily the game itself, but it was your buddies, your teammates, and the things you've gone through. And, you know, you help each other and all of that. So it is definitely a team game.
Yeah, it's the comradeship. A lot of players tell me when they leave their sport, that's the thing. You once said, Dave, what I do best is not let people block me. I just hate to be blocked. And following each season, the 49ers would rate their players based on their performance. The typical score for a linebacker was 750. And your score in 1973 was 1,306. And that season, you recorded 104 solo tackles, 4 forced fumbles, and you tackled opposing ball carriers for a loss on 13 occasions. And you were really a true student of the game. Everybody I've talked to about you said that. And you worked to be fundamentally correct. What does that mean, fundamentally correct?
Well, this goes back to when I was in high school and junior college and stuff, and the coaches that I had. And I always thought everything started with your feet. If your feet are in the wrong position when you do certain things, and that comes from the coaches that I had that taught me that. And fundamentally, you know, there's a lot of great athletes playing in there. I played against Ditka and John Mackey and guys like that, who are very talented guys. And the only way I'm probably going to succeed and keep from getting blocked and stuff was doing the proper technique, make my sure my feet are in the right spot at the right time, or the leverage that I'm supposed to have, I got to make sure I get there. As you play, I got older and played more games, we would look at films, and you pick up the little things that might tip off a play. A guard might be, his foot might be 6 inches behind on one play and not on another one. So you, wait a minute, why is he doing that? That type of thing. And then of course, you know, like I said, there's so many great athletes in that world, and there are a lot of them today, of course. But I fundamentally had to be correct because, you know, maybe I didn't have as much talent as some of the other guys, but I was going to work my tail off to make sure I knew fundamentally I was right.
Let me ask you about one of the stats I mentioned a little bit earlier because it kind of blows me away. You know as well as I do that when it came to health and when it came to doctors back in that period of time, it just wasn't the same as it is today. And you missed only one game during your career because of an injury. How did that happen? How were you able to do that?
I don't know. Maybe I got hit in the head too many times. Anyhow, it was 1970. We were playing in Miami in an exhibition game, and a guy clipped me and tore the cartilage in my knee. It was about the second or third exhibition game. And I played the whole season, 1970, with that. And I get my knee drained and put it in ice. And, oh, man, they talk about a challenge. But I had to play. I mean, I couldn't let my teammates down. So I had to be there and do that. And so it was a matter of our Dr. Lloyd Milburn was our team doctor. And so long as I wasn't, you know, hurting, breaking something else or creating more problems, he said, you know, you can play, but it's going to hurt. And, of course it did, I used to tape it up and all that. And then after the 1970 season, I went back to Oregon and a guy named Dr. Slocum, who at that time was one of the real orthopedic people in the country, operated on it and fixed it. But a cartilage at that time, I mean, I was in a hospital for a week and stuff, and now it's something you go in the morning at 10 and you're home at noon. So anyhow, but yeah, I wouldn't recommend that everybody do that, but it worked out for me.
Let me also ask you, during the course of the 11 years you played in the NFL, you think back about all the games that you played in. Is there one that is really indelibly in your mind forever?
Every one of them. You know, how fortunate I was to be able to do that. Looking back, like I said, my eighth grade class was 8 kids. My high school graduating class, the 4-year high school, I think there was 51 kids in my graduating class. I grew up on a farm in eastern Oregon. How in the heck did I ever end up going to Canton, Ohio? Great coaches, had some skill, I'm sure, a lot of luck, and a lot of good teammates.
When you take a look at all the great players you played with and you played against as well, Hall of Famers, outstanding players, what's the commonality all of you have?
I think it's probably competitiveness. You want to make sure you do everything correctly. And, you know, working with your teammates. I always thought that every team that I was on that was a good team had a half a dozen leaders that took care of internal problems. When I was in San Francisco, our coaches never had to discipline players because there was 6 or 8 guys that took care of that problem. And I remember Dick Nolan one time wanted to know where this one kid player was, and the player had done something that shouldn't have been done. And we had a team meeting, and he got a little huffy, so one of our guys took a hold of him and put him in the locker and put the lock on the locker and left him in there. And told him when he was ready to be part of the team, we'd let him out. So we go out to practice, and Coach Nolan wanted to know where so-and-so was. So, well, he's tied up right now. He'll be with us tomorrow. So that's the way we did things. And everybody, you know, we're all – nobody wants to lose. We're all there trying to win the thing. And we just make sure we're on the right track, and we stay there. And, you know, we had some good years, some years we didn't. But got to give the other teams credit. You know, it's like the Buffalo Bills went to, what, four Super Bowls and didn't win any. Well, wasn't there 31 other teams would have loved to have been in that spot? Only one team, I guess that's the reason you play the game, is figure out who gets the most points.
Dave, I want to thank you very much for joining us here on Sports Byline, your outstanding career. And I want to remind people, Dave Wilcox is represented by Rob Hempel and National Sports Distributors. And if you'd like more information about Dave and their other clients, just contact Rob. You can get a hold of him at nsdsports.com. Thanks a lot, Dave. Come back and join us anytime.
All right. Thanks for having us, and talk to you later.
Okay. Dave Wilcox with us, again, Hall of Fame linebacker who played his entire 11-year career with the 49ers, and that included playing in seven Pro Bowls and was an All-Pro five times. And as I said, the thing that jumped out at me is the fact that he only missed one game during his career because of an injury. And if you think back about, again, the medical aspects of playing professional football, it was not the same as it is today. We continue with more of you and Sports Byline.